Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of Large Old Cup. My name is Corey, and you're here with me now. So, I did something I don't normally do a lot of this past week, and that was travel. And which is great because it seems like every time I ever have to go to an airport, I immediately turn back into that sort of white trash kid from West Virginia where, I guess before I go into that, I'll give you some context on why I'm saying this. My family was a bit on the poorer side, so anytime we did go on a vacation, it was always within driving distance. I don't think, but maybe once, maybe two occasions, I ever traveled further than 5 or 6 hours in a car. Anything longer than that, we just didn't go to. So frequently, like, my family went to, like, Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, home of Dollywood, for the Dolly Parton fans out there, which there should be so many more of us, even though she is such a beloved figure. And I think one or two times I went to Myrtle Beach. Should not surprise anyone who've ever seen me in person. I'm very pale, therefore not really a beach person. I also don't care for heat or humidity. I like to be cold, and I also like to be, I like dreary weather. I find that to be very comforting and cozy for me. So because of this and this traveling only via car, I did not go to the airport until I was maybe 19 or 20 years old. And it was on a trip that I went on as part of a sort of a club that I was in college, where I, and to be totally frank with you, I've got a lot of like patchy memories sometimes due to some stuff that's happened to me in my life. I don't remember what this club was or like the name of it or what the objectives were or anything like that. I remember being in this club. I remember there were some meetings that happened throughout the year in one of the science building at Bluefield State College, now university. And I remember that I went to New York City as part of that, which was the second time I ever went to New York City. So because in the first time I was in high school and we went on a charter bus, which was an interesting experience in its own right. But anyway, so it was via plane, and we went on a prop job through the airport in Charlotte, North Carolina. So we went via car to Charlotte to get on a plane to go to New York City, which is an indication of, like, how traveling in West Virginia can kind of be a pain in the ass. There's only the one airport that I know of, and it's in Charleston, West Virginia, and it's not a terribly big airport. Like, I could not fly from Columbus to Charleston, West Virginia if I wanted to. I don't think they do flights like that. So that was my first ever experience on an airplane, and I don't really remember too much of the experience. I was with a large group of people, and I think there were adults there who kind of navigated that for me. So without fail, every time I've ever had to travel, I just don't know what to do at the airport. It's absurd. And I've done this a few times now. Like, I've flown to Boston, I've flown to Chicago. A year or so ago, I had a work trip that I had to fly and spend a week in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And, you know, for that one, I was by myself. But I still, like, this trip that I was taking to Atlanta, I still walked into this experience going, okay, all right, I have the app on my phone. The flight's leaving at this time. It's boarding at this time. Rule of thumb is you give yourself 2 hours before boarding so you can get through security if security's bad. And we'll go. It'll be fine. And then I get to the airport and I see, like, the check-in counter. And even though I've checked in on the app, I still have that urge, like, no, I have to go talk to the person at the counter. And the only reason I've not done that is I could not tell you what I would say to this person if I got to the front. Of just, hi, I'm here because of a weird sense of moral obligation that I have to announce that I'm here to you at the Delta counter. So, hi, my name is Corey. I'm here with you now at the airport counter. Please tell me what to do. Please tell me what to do. I'd love that if you could. But no, I had strong will and determination, and so I knew that I didn't have to go talk to the person at the Delta counter because I was not checking a bag. So I got through security easily, and then I got to sit in the terminal for the better part of 2 hours to wait for a plane. The trip back was a little more interesting because over the weekend there was apparently a massive computer outage through a Microsoft update that went awry. I don't know. I don't read the news because I feel like it's better for my mental health if I don't see what's going on in the news, because I feel that the news is incredibly biased one way or the other, and it's all doom and gloom and how the end of the world's coming and you're basically screwed either way. So I just said, fuck that noise. I'm going to live in my world, which might be a bubble of naivety or ignorance, but it's my world, so I'm going to live there for a bit. Thank you. And so long story short, my plane got delayed a lot. Like, I was originally supposed to be flying out at about 10:26 at night. I flew out at 1 o'clock in the morning, which meant I got back in Columbus around 3 a.m., which means after the lift back to my apartment, it was closer to 3:30, which is what you want. Which you want to do, because I have to work the very next day, and I had to make that crucial decision of, am I going to try to sleep for 2 hours and try to work with 2 hours of sleep, or am I going to say, fuck it, not sleep, and we'll just go at over 24 hours without sleep? So I did go with the option of sleeping a little bit and not a lot, and allowed panic and adrenaline and being super fucking busy at work get me through the day. This whole story is not to talk about travel and any bad luck or bad experiences. Trust me, I've got a few. I flew out of LaGuardia twice. I know nothing about travel, but I can tell you, LaGuardia fucking sucked twice. But, regardless, this is a story about having to kill several hours in an airport. A very beautiful human experience I got to encounter. So I, by all means, my flight was not the only one that was super delayed. A lot of flights were super delayed. A lot of flights were super delayed. So the airport was very full that late at night. There were a lot of people who had their days completely kind of fucked because of this computer issue. And so it's also that time of night in the airport where nothing is open, save for a Starbucks. I have to say, across from where I was in the terminal, there was a Starbucks that was hopping the whole night. And the two women that were working there, fucking super soldiers, is all I can say. They were just in a zone of order in, order out, you know, dealing with people who were crabby and dealing with people who were tired. And they handled it like pros. And, you know, there is a sense of entitlement with some people when it comes to minimum wage workers that they're supposed to be like that all the time. But my only reaction to that is you try pouring coffee for somebody who is unfortunately awake at 12:45 at night and knowing they still have a long flight home and other things to do. And they've got kids with them who don't understand why they have to wait so long in the airport. And it's a lot. So props to the two ladies that are working at Starbucks. I didn't need coffee. Probably should have had it, but I was trying to see if I could sleep on the plane. But if I knew their names, I'd shout them out, because they seem the absolute most lovely people in the world. My beautiful human experience, though, came about in the terminal itself. It started out like it was going to be kind of a miserable experience. I tend to listen to a lot of podcasts. So I was like, all right, I'll listen to podcasts for the few hours that I'm going to be stuck here, and the time will go like that. I'll just zone in on that. But I also knew that when I landed in Columbus, I'd need to get a lift home, because at 3:30 at night, my travel choices were going to be severely limited. In fact, I was not even 100% sure I was going to be being able to get a lift that late at night, and thought, seriously, I might just have to hang out in the airport until about 6 in the morning when I knew there were going to be cars around. Regardless, I knew I didn't want to waste my battery because I might need the lift. So I found one of those cool chairs that have the plug-in outlet, and I plugged in my phone, and I put on my headphones, and I started listening. And about 5 to 10 minutes into this podcast, I noticed that my phone's not charging. So something's wrong with the outlet. I moved to another chair with a different outlet. It's not charging there either. Go to a different chair with a different outlet. Not charging there either. So I was like, I can risk it and burn through some of this battery, or I just suck it up and I don't listen to anything. And I would rather be safe with a nearly fully charged phone than run the risk of not having a phone at 3:30 in the morning in you know, the airport. So I try to find a comfortable place to sit, which is, you know, kind of difficult. I don't think those chairs are really meant for you to be hanging around in for terribly long, even, you know, though you will be. And I move around a couple spots, and I find there's this kind of empty row, and I take a seat, and there's a man directly behind me who's engaged in a deep conversation with a young woman sitting to his left. And this man has the most beautiful Nigerian accent I've ever heard in my entire life. A bit of background and context. There was a year and a half of my life where I was working in a retail bank as a teller supervisor. Essentially, my responsibility was the operations of the branch, making sure that the tellers were doing what they were supposed to be doing, and making sure that we were operating within their security protocols. I can get really technical with it, but I don't want to bore you. Regardless, the branch that I was located in was referred to almost jokingly as the global branch, because it was in a spot in Columbus where the primary clientele were not American-born citizens. So on a regular day-to-day basis, my customer base was probably about 90% people who did not have English as a first language. So I had a lot of customers from various parts of Africa, like Ghana, like Nigeria. I had a couple of folks who were from, oh gosh, where are they from? Regardless, multiple different countries in Africa. I also had a lot of Indian clientele, you know, not the the East Indian, not the Native American people who were frequently referred to as such. I also had a lot of Pakistani and folks from Jordan and some other countries out in the Middle East. I also had refugees from Nepal and Bhutan who were in this neighborhood. And it was a very challenging experience at times because there is a there's a frustration that comes when you're trying to communicate with somebody who doesn't understand you. And I am not saying that from my perspective. You know, I have been interacting with people and handling people and speaking with people for a very long time now. So I have a lot of patience when I'm working with somebody who may not understand me. But these were people who were new to this country and English was not their first language. And it got to be kind of tense sometimes because they just want to tell you what they want. And if you can't understand them and you have to keep asking questions and they're busy and there's a line and they just want to move on with their day and you are that obstacle in front of them right now, you are the thing standing in between them going home or getting something to eat or taking their kids to school or whatever the situation is. They just want you to do the thing that they cannot communicate to you, which is very ironic that I stumbled over the word communicate. So, like I said, there were a lot of really intense conversations that I would have. One day I got challenged to a fight. I was talking with this man. He wanted something I couldn't give him. And his reaction was to challenge me to a fist fight. He asked me if I would like to step outside with him. And I told him, no, I cannot do that because I'm not allowed to leave the teller line. Regardless, there are a lot of really beautiful human experiences that I had there as well. There was a customer. He was from Jordan. His name is Mario. And Mario was probably one of the funniest people I've ever met in my entire life. Mario would crack jokes and he had this super dry sense of humor where he could say something absurd and you wouldn't realize it because the way his tone of voice was just so just matter of fact about it. Like, multiple times he kept inviting me to come over to his house and take milk baths with him. Like, and I don't know sometimes if he was flirting with me or not. Maybe he was. I'm really bad judge of that. But, you know, that was Mario. And there was a day where I had a customer who we were struggling on the communication aspect. He lost his temper and started to shout at me. Which, working that kind of job, you learn how to take stuff on the chin really, really quick. Because we had a lot of employees there who didn't last long for that reason. Because you're going to get yelled at and you're going to get screamed at. And it unfortunately comes with the territory. And if you can't handle it, you're going to find out really quick that you can't. So anyway, this guy just absolutely chewed me out. Just completely tore me a new one. And I got him out the door. And when he left, he was totally fine. And Mario was next in line. And Mario came up to me and he was like, "Oh, that looked rough." I'm like, "Yeah, it wasn't great." And Mario started to laugh and he said, "That's the thing that you Americans do not understand." He's like, "Did you see the way he walked out of here? Not a care in the world. It's not because he got his way. When you get mad, you bottle it in. You don't react. You don't shout. You don't let that aggression and that frustration out of you. You keep it inside of you. That man, though, he got it out. He's fine. You're going to hold on to that tension in your shoulders and your neck for at least another hour. Him, though, he's totally good." He's like, "And that's what you need to learn, that you cannot bottle things up." Now, I'll be honest with you, I still haven't necessarily learned that lesson from Mario. But it was a very poignant moment, because when I got to understand that, when you have somebody that is less than a foot away from you face to face and they're shouting and screaming at you, it's really hard not to take something like that personally. Even though you know they're not mad at you as a human being, that you did not do anything to them, they're still upset and they're still angry and they're still yelling. And the proximity of it and the intensity of it and the fact that they're making eye contact with you can fucking rattle your cage really bad. So when I had that conversation with Mario and I had that realization of, like, that's what these people were doing, they were just doing what came natural to them and they were just letting it out, you know? It was nothing personal. This guy is not going to remember my name. He probably won't remember what I look like. So the next time he comes into the bank, he'll see me and it'll probably be fine and he won't think anything of it, even though I know that's who he is and I'll know that I have to be careful with him because he might get mad at me again. But for him, doesn't matter. Doesn't faze him. So it made interactions with angry and upset people in that particular branch a lot easier because I was getting that perspective of, I understand they're frustrated, and I understand that they're mad, and I understand that they're upset, but I also understand that they're just getting out of their system so it doesn't ruin their day. And I think there's something beautiful about that. So to kind of go back to what I'm talking about in this interaction with this beautiful interaction that I got to witness in this airport, this Nigerian man behind me is speaking to this woman who is also from somewhere in Africa. I don't know where. I couldn't place her accent. But they're having a conversation about faith and religion, which you would think I would not be the biggest fan of. Some additional context. One of the best things I think my parents ever did for me is they gave me the choice of if I wanted to have faith in my life. When I was young, my parents, my mom in particular, would ask me if I ever wanted to go to church. And I always said no. I had no interest in it. And I don't know why I didn't have an interest in it. I just didn't. So every year, I would be sent to a vacation Bible school for a week, because that's what you do in below the Mason-Dixon line, is you get sent to vacation Bible school during the summer so that your parents can do whatever it is they want to do for that few hours that you're gone. And after every vacation Bible school stint, I'd be asked, did that make me want to go to church? And every year the answer was no. So I had that background I don't judge anyone who's religious. It doesn't faze me in the least. The only time that something like that will upset me is if you're using those beliefs to withhold rights from somebody else that you disagree with. But I feel like that should be self-explanatory if you understand anything about me or have kind of picked up on the general vibe I have over the last five episodes of The Large Old Cup. So anyway, I'm sitting in this terminal. There's this man behind me who's having a very deep conversation about faith and religion with this young woman. And it's easy to think that this person just feels trapped in the conversation. Like, she doesn't want to actually be here for this, but she's sort of cornered. She has nowhere to go. She's sitting in the airport and this guy's just chatting her off. But that's not the case. Like, they're engaged in a conversation. She's contributing to the conversation. This is a two-person experience. And he's talking to her about the importance of having faith and the importance of having a goal set in your life and things that you want to accomplish and things that are important to you and what have you. And, she's answering back with questions and answers for questions that he's asking. And, you know, what's at one point, because he's very clearly a Christian, at one point she asks him, well, what if I want to be Muslim? Like, what if I want to be with a man who is of that faith? Are you saying that I'm not going to find happiness that way? And he said, no. You will find happiness because you've committed yourself to a cause and you've committed yourself to a belief system. And it was really strange because, like, in his own way, this really wasn't a conversation about religion. Like, he wasn't trying to necessarily convert her to Christianity, but he was just kind of engaging with this stranger, because it was very apparent they did not know each other. He was just engaging with this stranger on this idea of, like, the importance of having a belief system, the importance of believing something. And, you know, it's late. I'm tired. I know I'm not going to sleep much. I know I have to work in the morning. I know that this is going to be a long wait in the terminal. But I couldn't help but, like, find this guy's overall aura to be very soothing. Like, he had a very beautiful voice. And he never raised it much higher than it was, which is, you know, he didn't sound harsh in any way. And there was a gentleness to him which felt very appropriate to have 15 minutes after midnight on a Tuesday evening. So I guess the takeaway from that whole experience is that we live in a very weird time. And I feel like every time is a very weird time. Like, if you went back to the 1970s, someone's going to say, we live in a very weird time. But we are in a really interesting place where it feels like there are only two sides to every argument, and they're both incredibly extreme, and that there's no such thing as the middle anymore. And I guess it was kind of beautiful to witness a conversation that felt like it was in the middle. You know, she didn't really confirm one way or the other if she was Christian or if she was going to be Muslim or she was simply agnostic or even an atheist. But that didn't really spoil the conversation they were having. And like I said, I think what they were talking about was incredibly poignant because it's what separates you from necessarily like a nihilist. You know, there's nothing wrong with nihilism per se. I mean, you know, the belief of nothing. Because I think that's something very powerful. I remember being wrecked with anxiety and fear in my early mid-20s. And then I had this moment of epiphany. I was listening to Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen, of course. And it was a song I had heard multiple times throughout my entire life. But for whatever reason, as I was walking back to my apartment from Court Street in Athens, I got struck by the line, nothing really matters in the end. And it hit me like a bolt of lightning of like, yeah, nothing really matters in the end. Which I guess is a freeing way to say, like, it's okay to make mistakes, and it's okay to not know what you're doing, and sometimes the uncertainty's fine, because, you know, there's no really winning or losing in life. It just is a thing that happens, and then it's gone. And nothing really matters, except for what you choose to make matter. Which I guess is a certain way of discussing having a faith or a belief system. You know, this man clearly had a very deep faith in religion. And this woman was a little less certain, but she was open to the conversation. And I'm sort of that belief of, like, nothing really matters except for what you make matter. And that's very freeing. And it is also very scary, because then you have to figure out what matters. And maybe that's what the point of this is, you know? I started Large Old Cup because I wanted something else to do, and I wanted something that I felt like I could just take as a stream of consciousness. You know, I used to write in journals all the time. I'm supposed to be writing in journals now. My therapist was very big on that idea, and so far I've not done that yet, but... You know, I'm just telling on myself now. But anyway, this is a way for me to just kind of talk and let things happen and see where I end up. I had no intentions of going into, like, the Bohemian Rhapsody thing, but sort of I wanted to tell this story of this really charming individual I got to experience in an airport at, you know, midnight on a day or a weekend where multiple flights had been delayed and canceled and people were in bad moods. And, you know, I saw a woman, like, screaming on her phone as she was walking down the terminal. You know, tensions were high, to say the very least. But not for this dude, man. He was just hanging out, experiencing life and engaging in a deep conversation with a total stranger. And that's kind of beautiful. You know, I've lived in the same apartment for 10 years now. I know absolutely none of my neighbors. I don't speak to them. I barely even see them. But, you know, this is a guy who just struck up conversation with somebody in the airport, and they had a really profound conversation, or at least I think it was profound. You know, I think there's some beauty in that. And I think, you know, close to 1 a.m. in an airport on a flight back that's been delayed a bunch, and you know you're going to have to work the next day, finding a little bit of beauty is not such a bad thing after all. So I hope out there you're being delusionally confident and you're being recklessly optimistic. I hope that you're finding some beauty in your life in weird and unexpected places. And I hope you're living a little bit like Mario and telling people, you know, try to get stuff out instead of bottling it in. Because ultimately, that's a lot healthier, I guess. I don't know. I still suck at it. Anyway, this has been Large Little Cup. I'm Corey. I'll see you guys later. Bye.